The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio, and thank you this hot summer day for checking us out. We actually tape these shows either Thursday, Friday before the weekend, and every Friday morning about 6:35, check out AM 690 with Mike Buck. I do a little promo with Mike to talk about and promote this weekend show. This show is a second of a two-part series on Our Care, Our Choice, the new law that was put in place January 1st of this year. And we're with Samantha Trad, who actually is works for Compassion and Choices, which actually is a national nonprofit that works with different communities and has helped us get this bill going here in Hawaii and get it passed. And so thanks for the show, Samantha.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And then later on, we'll get a little local version with our other friend here that just walked into the studio, Aubrey Hawk. But anyway, so thanks for checking us out. As you know, we're always on our website, generations808.com. You can go out and check out our past issues. This show will be up in about a couple weeks once we get it from our engineer, Leah, here, and then get our webmaster to get it up on there. But if you listen to us today, August, we're going to be on August 24th. You probably have seen, hopefully you've seen our current Generations magazine, the August-September issue, with three beautiful, brave ladies that have been affected by breast cancer. And this will be handed out at the Susan G. Komen race in October. And actually, I'll be there. I'll probably be doing it with my wife and my son, hopefully, get them out of bed. And that's kind of early, but really to promote it, make it aware. My mother and sister had breast cancer as well. So this is really something I've always wanted to do. And thanks to Amanda there, the executive director, she emailed me out of the blue. Said, hey, my friend is Stacey Hayashi from the Gopher Broke movie. How come she was on a cover? She's only in her 40s. I said, aren't you a magazine older? I said, yes, but the Gopher Broke. And the movie was about the 442nd 100th Battalion. And so Samantha's a friend of Stacey's, and so I said, sure, we're going to do this story. So it's a great article, three brave women. You got to check it out. This will run out. I'll be honest, this is going to run out in a few weeks. So it's on the newsstands now. It's at all state libraries in the whole state, including Lanai, Molokai, on the neighbor islands. All the YMCAs here, all the Times Pharmacy, which is an easy, great place to go to. There's so many on Oahu. And on the Big Island, KTA, and on Maui, the Office on Aging, and Kauai's Office on Aging. So check it out there. It's a great story. But anyway, this issue has been on. We've had this covered this topic before, before the bill was passed with Blake Oshiro, and I think the other lady that was on with Blake. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
Was it Mary Steiner?
Yeah, maybe? Mary Steiner. Yes, I see her face, and I always forget her name, but. Anyway, yeah, Mary Steiner. So actually, you can go to our website, generations808.com, and you can listen to that show. That was before the bill passed, and then the bill passed in 2018, and then the law became in place January 1st. So, Samantha, well, let's go out again. I know Dr. Miller did it last week, but about the law, I want to cover, like, about the law, the process, because you're very experienced in this, right? Probably a lot more than me. Well, all I do is read what I see online. But,
well,
yeah.
Let me give you a little background, and I'll give an overview of the law. So as you mentioned, Compassion and Choices is a national organization. However, our work in Hawaii is locally led. It's really important that we hear from the people here locally and that, you know, we don't try to come in from the mainland and, do things like we've done in other states. So we try to combine our institutional knowledge of medical aid and dying laws with the what's happening here on the ground and really listen to the people here and meet the needs of the patients, because our goal is to empower patients to have the end-of-life experience that they want. And one of the best ways to do that is to authorize medical aid in dying laws, because even though very few people will ever actually use it, there's huge ripple effects that really help people to have meaningful conversations and to advocate for themselves. So not just anyone can use medical aid in dying. Mm-hmm. It's you have to be terminally ill with 6 months or less to live. You need to be an adult who's mentally capable of understanding why you're taking the medication. And you have two different physicians who confirm the diagnosis and the prognosis, the terminal diagnosis and the prognosis of 6 months or less to live.
Right.
You also have to have a mental health assessment by a social worker, psychologist, or sociologist who says that you are indeed mentally capable and understand the decision you're making. And there's a minimum 20-day waiting period. So there's a lot of safeguards in place. And one of the beautiful things about the law is that the underlying illness is what is written on the death certificate, because that is indeed what is ending the person's life. You know, the people who use medical aid in dying, they don't want to die, but their terminal illness has taken over a lot of control. So medical aid in dying gives them that a certain element of control back so that they can end their suffering right. If they need to.
So when you say it's really important, when you say on a death certificate, they would put what?
The terminal illness.
Terminal illness. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they do that normally?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking to myself.
Well, and that's a really good point, because there are many end-of-life options. So, for example, right. Palliative sedation is an end-of-life option that terminal patients sometimes right. choose, or voluntary stopping eating and drinking, stopping treatment. A lot of time patients decide they want to stop treatment. And, you know, with all of those options, it just like medical aid in dying, the underlying illness is what's listed on the death certificate.
Yeah. That's really important, because I know I've had family members, clients, friends that have gone through that. And it's just so difficult. And I was talking to Dr. Miller about this and I was talking to another friend about this, that when animals get sick and they know it's terminal, they'll just put them down. Not that we're animals, but it is just I had to put my dog down. It was very difficult.
Mm.
I couldn't believe how difficult it was.
I'm so sorry.
Right now, especially, you know, but it's just something I think the options, I'm glad the governor signed a bill. I'm glad Compassion Choices were here. But give us a background on some of the other states that have done this and their success rate. And also seven states that are really looking at this right now?
So 9 states have authorized medical aid in dying.
9.
Yeah. And Washington, D.C. So 10 jurisdictions.
In a county.
Yeah. We're very close in a number of states. In New York, Governor Cuomo has mentioned several times that there shouldn't be a zip code that separates people from having the option of medical aid in dying. In New Jersey, their law went into effect August 1st, but unfortunately, yesterday there was actually a lawsuit filed that put their law on hold temporarily. The lawsuit is something that won't affect the people in Hawaii, but there is, you know, there is a religious opposition that does everything they can to stop the law.
Is that the same thing happened in California after their law passed?
Yes, there was also a lawsuit. So a lawsuit was filed right after California's law went into effect, and it's actually still in the courts. But the law is active in California.
Yeah. And so are you guys helping other states? I mean, that's what you guys do. You come in, you grassroots. I mean, I remember talking to Dr. Miller that when I first met him, probably about 3-4 years ago when his first issue came to Hawaii, and he actually had a poopoo hour, dinner cocktail thing at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember meeting a couple of doctors and other people, but it was something that slowly you guys come in, you really listen to the community. And I think the major reason why it pushed, I mean, that's my personal opinion, is that didn't they do a survey, a survey in Hawaii?
Yes.
And it found like 90% or 80-something percent people wanted this.
Yeah, 86%.
Oh, it was 86%. Yeah. Wow.
That's and everywhere we go, the majority of people want to have this option.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's ripple effects. You know, when states authorize medical aid in dying, we see hospice rates increase. More people start talking about things like palliative care, which is an incredible option that people have. Even and palliative care can be for patients who may not have a terminal diagnosis. It's a type of comfort care.
Yeah. Well, if you mention palliative care, I'm going to tell you, I would say unless you've been through this process, 80-90% of people are doing palliative care. What is that? You know,
it's kind of a wonky word, but it's a great thing. And
absolutely. I've had clients and family gone through that. But it started conversation. That's one of the beautiful things about this. I think about 3 years ago when I really started getting serious to take a look at this. But what it does is it starts the conversation with mm-hmm. families. Because I don't know, several years ago, I heard that Hawaii was in the bottom third of people using hospice in the country.
Mm.
And then we were number two in the country and people dying in the ER, mm-hmm. which is not good. Mm-hmm. And that just tells you that people are not having that conversation with their families early enough.
Yes.
I had a relative that didn't call hospice until that week.
Mm.
I have two very good friends of mine. Husband's passed away and is still dealing with 2 or 3 years later on.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and one thing about hospice, we've had him on before, is that the grieving portion after they pass on continues with hospice, and they need to take advantage of that.
Yes, absolutely. Because hospice is great.
Yeah, everybody deals with it differently. You know, I tear up when I talk about my dog I put down 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine what goes on with families. But so with the law, you mentioned two different doctors that need mm-hmm. to sign off, right?
Yes.
So it could be their primary physician, mm-hmm. and who would be their second doctor?
It can be their oncologist. It can be any physician who's licensed in Hawaii who's able to make the terminal diagnosis and the prognosis of 6 months or less to live.
Okay. And are there a list of doctors that say they will, or we just got to ask around?
Well, we got to ask around, and we don't keep a list on purpose because what we have found in Oregon, there was a list in Oregon, and you got to remember, you know, medical aid in dying, it's been in effect for 22 years, and we have 21 years of data from Oregon. So Oregon's in their 22nd year in October, it'll be 22 years. So we have 40 years of combined data on aid in dying. And what happened in Oregon was after the law passed, there were a few doctors who started practicing. People figured out who they were. And it was so much easier for a physician to just refer their patient to another physician who they knew would write the prescription if the patient qualified, instead of taking on the responsibility themselves. And physicians started burning out. You know, they didn't want to be the only ones writing the prescription, and only privileged people who understood who to go to and where to go were able to access the option. So what we did at Compassion and Choices is, first of all, we threw out the list, and we really actively started going out and mentoring physicians, doing continuing education credits, and encouraging physicians to support their patients. I will say I do think it's really important that physicians can opt out if they have a religious or moral objection.
Right.
But if they don't and they just they need support to be able to support their patients, then we do everything we can to support their healthcare system, their hospice, as well as the physicians themselves. So.
Yeah.
We're trying to do the same thing here in Hawaii, and we see very similar patterns in Hawaii as we've seen in other states where, mm-hmm. you know, there's a few physicians at first who, we get called all the time. Who do I go to? Who's the physician who will do this for me? And we say, we can help you talk to your physician. We can mentor your physician if they are willing to support you. And we've actually already heard stories about physicians who have done a complete 360 on aid in dying for their patients. And it's been an incredibly meaningful experience for them to support their patients and help them to have this end of life experience that they want.
I think it's just a matter of time to digest it a little bit, maybe see some experiences. You know, a lot of them may not want to be the first one out there, mm-hmm. you know, carrying the flag. But what is Hawaii's law requires a psychologist to make sure their sane and mental capacity in terms of handling that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And is that normal for other states? Other states have that law?
No other state mandates it. And I would say, too, that there are actually three different people who make this determination, because both the main physician who ends up writing the prescription, as well as the second physician,
right,
they also assess for mental capacity.
Right.
And I actually forgot to mention earlier, it's extremely important that the patient self-administers the medication themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not any kind of assisted situation. The patient is making the decision on their own and taking the medication on their own.
Well, what happens if they physically cannot raise, because it's a compound and mm-hmm. they have to put it in a liquid form, I believe. Is that correct?
That's the most commonly used right. aid in dying medication.
Right.
Yeah.
So they have to be able to lift up the glass and drink it.
Well, they have to be able to self-administer. So right. There have been cases where a patient has a feeding tube, and as long as they can physically push the button for the feeding tube, or as long as it's them putting the medication in, giving themselves the medication mm-hmm. themselves, ingesting the medication on their own, you know, you can't have anybody helping them do it, then they're self-administering. Mm-hmm. They're ingesting the medication.
You know, when I heard about Dr. Miller was telling about the having a psychologist part of that law, I thought about it myself when I first saw this. I think, why did he want that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're two doctors already, so you actually have a third physician requiring this. Was that put in the law, or was it always part of the law when it first started out?
It was in the law. It was how it's what the legislature had in the Our Care, Our Choice Act. So I think, you know, I think that it's really important to have safeguards. And what people here are trying to figure out is what is a speed bump and what is a roadblock. And so far, I think the mandatory mental health assessment. We have heard of people who've had some problems trying to find someone to assess them. I actually, I spoke to a psychologist this week who's done 8 mental health assessments.
Wow.
And he actually said he felt that it could be optional and not mandatory, that, you know, it was pretty clear pretty quickly that this patient totally understood, they were mentally capable. But, you know, if that's what the people of Hawaii want for now, it's, you know, it's important then to have that third mental health capacity assessment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hawaii always wants to be a little bit different, always want to be safeguarded. So hopefully not that we need to take it away, but it is something that hopefully it'd be easy to find a psychologist to
mm-hmm.
be that third doctor that signs off on it.
You know, the Hawaii Psychological Association has been wonderful. They've done a lot of education and mentorship
really?
With their association. So I would highly recommend, if somebody is looking for a mental health professional to do the assessment, to reach out to the Hawaii Psychological Association, and they'll make sure nobody falls through the cracks.
Okay. Well, yeah, I should probably get them on the show or have them write an article.
Oh, yeah.
It's really important. So what through this process, they get the 3 doctors. One of the main doctors prescribes the medicine, and they have to go through a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
I understand there's still not a lot of pharmacies doing this.
We know of 3 pharmacies who do it. So right now, the most common aid in dying medication has to go through a compounding pharmacy.
Right.
So there aren't a lot of compounding pharmacies, but we do know of 3 in Hawaii that will fill prescriptions. And if they can actually mail the prescriptions if necessary. So to a neighbor island, for example. And it works that way in other states, too.
Yeah. But this, you said there's 3 that will do it, because mm-hmm. I guess somebody has to be certified to mix the compound, what I understood from Dr. Miller. But how many, so there's 3 pharmacies. Do you know how many more pharmacies are able to do that?
It's up to the pharmacy. So if they're a compounding pharmacy, then they can do it, and we're happy to help them. We actually do keep a list of pharmacies that we will share with physicians, because it's up to the physician who writes the prescription to find the pharmacy, and we have the permission, of course, from the pharmacies. But we're happy to share that with the physician. And I got to tell you, the pharmacists who are willing to fill these prescriptions are so incredible. They have the kindest hearts. They care so much about people, that's why they do it. They want to make sure that the patients are helped. I talked to one pharmacist who's gone to people's houses to deliver the medication when he's able to, because it's just, it's so meaningful to them.
Deliver the medication.
Sure. Wow. Yeah. If they want to, they can deliver it, or they can have the patient pick it up, or have a designated person pick it up, or they can mail it. But, you know, they want to make sure that patients are supported. And, you know, a lot of them have had experiences with end of life, right?
Sure.
I've heard there's 100% mortality rate. So most of us, most of us, have experienced death, and, you know,
well, you know, most of us has not experienced death, but
well,
taking the compound drug. Yes, I'm sure.
For me, you know, I kind of joke that I'm the life of the party, because when I go to parties, people ask, what do you do? And so I explain, I work on patient-centered care at end of life. I work in death and dying. And people often will tell me, oh, that must be so depressing. And I say, no, actually, I feel that it's a privilege for me, because I love life so much. I try to enjoy every single moment I can. And, you know, I hear stories from people all the time about death they've experienced. And it's mm-hmm. it's so traumatic to lose someone and to go through that process. And especially if their death isn't what the patient wanted, what the family member wanted. And it can be really just so heartbreaking. So to be able to at least help people, encourage them to have conversations now so that they're more prepared, and to help people have the end of life experience they want. It's so incredibly important and really beautiful.
It is. It's a life-changing event, but I think we all need to have options, and it has to be a clean discussion. I was talking to somebody yesterday about how I have a friend of mine in from the mainland, and we're doing so many things. We actually went to the Hawaii 5-0 studio yesterday.
Cool.
We didn't see Alex or Scott, but we saw a few other ones, but just to see the set, everything. And we did another thing, and we went to do a rolling class. And I don't know if you did the hard roller now, not the big roller, the hard roller. And he goes, and we went to dinner, and he goes, wow, Percy, we're doing so much. And besides, we had to work half the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, after this, we'll be doing a lot of other things too. But he goes, man, you love life so much. I said, yeah, that's what life's about. And we all need to continue to learn and share. So I give you a lot of credit. It is, I mean, I've had hospice people on this radio show, and I'm telling you, they're angels.
Oh, yeah.
It's just something I think I wish people would grasp it better and talk about it more. Hopefully they have their medical directive, their pulse in place, mm-hmm. talk to their kids and family, because I've heard stories of people that have brothers that have fought with each other.
Mm.
You know, the medical directive says, you know, mom doesn't want to be fed anything or given any water. Does that mean we don't wet our lips with a towel?
Yeah.
It's very in a clear cut.
It's really difficult.
But it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my family, I have three sisters and two brothers, and I know emotionally it'd be very difficult.
You know, I highly recommend for people to go to Kakua Mau's website. Mm-hmm. They have excellent resources and they're a local hospice association. And you know, if anybody's listening who hasn't filled out an advance directive, they have tools on their website. We do too, but I've really been impressed with the work that Kakua Mau does here. And I think that, you know, it's important to have those conversations now. And what we encourage people to do, you know, I talked about the ripple effects of medical aid in dying.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage everybody to ask their physician today, that you don't have to be terminally ill to ask your physician if they would support you in the option of medical aid in dying. And especially since it can be very difficult to find a physician, it's good to find out now if your physician is willing to support you in that option, you know, and really if you were to qualify for
right.
it. But it also gets the physicians thinking, you know, most physicians don't really know if they would support their patient or not until they have a patient ask them. I know I asked my physician, I'm 37 years old, and I asked him, how many marathons can I run a year? So we had that conversation, and I said, oh, and if I were terminally ill with 6 months or less to live, would you support me in the option of medical aid in dying? And he was really surprised, understandably, and no one had ever asked him that before. And he was a younger doctor, and he knew about the law. And he had to think about it, but he got back to me and he said, you know, I would. If you were really sick and you qualified for the law and that's what you wanted, I would respect your decision and I would support you in it. And I said, great, because I'm really busy and I don't want to have to go find a new doctor.
Oh, it's so hard today. But you're right. That's something next time I see my doctor likes to read a lot. And he spends actually more than the 10 minutes he should on every patient, or 8 minutes. And we always talk about it because of the magazine. He knows about aging. And so it's interesting. He goes, Percy, I got this article. Let me sit down and talk to you about it. So maybe next time I see him, I do an annual physical every year. I got to ask him about that. Because I think that's a good one. I think everybody should start to plant the seed and see what the attitude is. Because I think it's hard. I mean, it is a major decision, I think. Especially in their world, being a doctor, they're creative. They have to save people. That's their job.
Yeah.
And to do this against maybe what their morals and beliefs are, it would be difficult.
And again, if they don't feel comfortable, that's completely fine. You know, nobody should be demonized for their own decisions. But for a patient, you know, if that's something you want, then, you know, you may want to find a doctor who would support you in that option if it's important to you.
Yeah. So here is Samantha Trad from California, but she's actually with Compassion and Choices. You can go to Compassion and Choices.
.org/Hawaii.
I saw that you have a Hawaii section.
Yeah, and we have our resources translated in 6 different languages for Hawaii.
All right. You can also go to kokuamau.org for more information. We're going to take a short break. Hang on and come back because we're going to talk more about some of the local things going on here, some of the hospitals possibly, who's doing it. Can we get a list of pharmacies that currently do it right now? Do we have that?
You know, we share that with physicians, but we don't share it widely because we don't want them to have any problems.
It's not my issue. It's the doctor got to prescribe it. He'll find someplace. But yeah. Anyway, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay. Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play. We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here. Bet you find it at the Cow.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
Have you been looking for a safe anti-inflammatory for your health and longevity? Introducing Xanthosin, a doctor-recommended astaxanthin supplement that supports your joints, heart, liver, and longevity. Xanthosin is safe, pure, and specially formulated for superior absorption. Xanthosin complies with all FDA regulations for manufacturing and labeling. Xanthosin, the safe anti-inflammatory for health and longevity. Available at a GNC store near you.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
A very important period is coming up, what we call AEP, Annual Election Period, from October 15 to December 7.
The annual election period is when you can change from one plan to another. The plans change. The benefits, coverage, and premiums may be different. So know what you should have. What are your current health needs, your budget, and priorities? You need to make sure the medications you are currently taking are covered and that your doctor is in the network you're looking at.
Like we mentioned before, all plans are different. There's no one plan that's good for everybody. Everybody got different wants and needs. Call us and we can help you.
Helping you work your way through the confusion, Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Did you know residential care homes offer a family-oriented atmosphere? At Caregivers Heart Hawaii, our kupuna become part of the family. The smaller environment allows for more personal attention. For example, there's no waiting to go to the bathroom compared to other long-term care options. The patient-to-caregiver ratio is smaller and help is faster. Over time, residential care homes are less expensive compared to other long-term care options. Our caregivers are experienced and enjoy what they do, and all homes are ADA approved. Don't feel stressed and overwhelmed or try to do this alone. Aloha, I am Ku'unani Demonte with Caregivers Heart Hawaii. Let us help you with all your care home placement needs. Caregivers Heart Hawaii has knowledge and experience. For a free consultation and to learn more about us, go to caregivershearthawaii.com, where treating kupuna like family is our business.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include 3 meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit VoidVacationsHawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Hauer from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer. Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio. Hopefully you're listening to us live. Saturdays from 5 to 6, Sunday from 3 to 4 here on AM 690, The Answer. But also on our website, generations808.com. You can pull down from our archive list of our radio shows. We're here with Samantha Trad from Compassion and Choices. And actually, Aubrey Hawk joined us.
Hello.
A local PR person, lady that's done great work here. Actually, you know, so we're talking about the Our Choice, Our Care, Our Choice bill that became effective January 1st. But Aubrey, I wanted to start with you and, you know, to set the stage, really to get people engaged and to pay attention. I know you mentioned about a local story of a person on a Big Island, I believe.
Correct.
That actually went through the process, and then his family gave us okay to talk about his experience and the family's experience. So let's, can we start off with you, if you don't mind?
Sure. Just to give you a little background on me, I've been working on behalf of this end-of-life choice movement for almost 10 years now here in Hawaii, and it's really been...
10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you know, it was a 20-year-plus effort to have our law passed.
Right.
So to really see some of those ups and downs happening in the last half of that effort, just incredible, you know, what goes into that process and the passion that people have. So I am primarily media relations, community relations for Compassion and Choices Hawaii, but I'm also a volunteer because I do personally feel very passionate about this. And so I now reside on the Big Island on the Hilo side.
Really?
And yes. But I do get back to the big city from time to time. So I interact with actual patients and providers in my community.
Wow.
As part of what I do, giving presentations to the community to educate on this new law. And it, I did meet a wonderful woman named Kathy Johnson, and I got her story of her beloved husband, Steve, who was a former fire chief in Oregon. So this man was just, I mean, they all called him Uncle Steve in Kona. He was beloved by all. He did a blog. He was just so, so full of life. He was diagnosed with cancer about 10 years ago, went through all the chemo, did everything, and said, I'm never doing that again. So when his symptoms kind of returned late last year, about November, when he did go into the doctor, it was stage 4, and it had come back with a vengeance, as it can often does. And he said, and his doc actually was the one who told him, you know, this law was just signed by governor in April of 2018, and it's going to be in effect. So you might want to start looking into that. And of course, this man who's so used to just being in charge, that he wanted that final story of his life to end how he wanted it to. And so they went through the process, and it was early in you know, the law being in effect. So they did have to do a lot of running around, and, you know, sometimes they found they even knew more than their providers did because they were really researching it. But they did finally end up getting a prescription, and Steve actually flew over here to Oahu and took a cab to the pharmacy here on this island, even though it can be mailed. But he was such a, you know, he just wanted to plan everything. And so the pharmacist was so graceful with him, explained everything. He went back home knowing exactly what he would do. That was in March of this year. Come late April, things really started to get bad for him. Just constant nausea and vomiting, pain, just nothing would help. Thankfully, he was enrolled in hospice. The medications weren't helping to control his pain. So on May 4th, he told his dear wife, tomorrow's the day. And so on Cinco de Mayo, they were out on their beautiful deck, and he put on his best Aloha shirt, and he drank his medication, and he laid down for a nap like he always does, and he passed away. And one thing that Kathy told me, his wife, there was so much anxiety from the moment that he was diagnosed again to the moment he had the medication in his hand. And that's, of course, part of a terminal diagnosis. But she said the minute he got it, it was like Christmas for him. And then he could just relax because he knew he had control. And so even if a patient does not opt to take the medication, which, of course, they, you know, it's their choice once they have it, that peace of mind and that easing of that anxiety can allow them to enjoy their final days so much more fully, because they know they have a choice.
Yeah. And that to me is the most important thing. And we all have religious beliefs. We all have family issues. I know you always have prayers to clear it with your spouse, too, though.
Sure. And, you know, they had talked a lot about it together. But Kathy also shared with me that because they had spent that much time leading up to it and planning and talking about their wishes together, her grieving process now is much lighter. Mm-hmm. Of course, she's still grieving, but she's happy knowing that he got to die the way he wanted to.
He made his choice, and he was allowed to make that choice.
Right.
That's what I think. I think in hindsight, maybe down the road, Hawaii residents and Hawaii physicians and pharmacies and politicians will realize how much impact this has on people's lives. And that's one of the things with our magazine. We deal with people's lives here, and I'm glad, you know, Compassion Choices has stepped up, and glad we're able to hire people like you, like Aubrey, to do this and get it out there, because it's something I think, you know, we're the oldest state in the country. We have more seniors than anybody else. And it's great to have this. And so hopefully we'll see. Now, which one of you can give us some late statistics or current or updated statistics on amount of people have applied and got the prescription? Because I understand that's a process as well. And how many have executed a plan and how many have not?
So the Hawaii Department of Health put out a report in June on the first 5 months of the law being in effect. And the report said that there were four different physicians who wrote 8 prescriptions. And 3 of the patients who had prescriptions passed away in the first 5 months. 2 of them used the medication and 1 did not, which actually mirrors the national statistics that, like Aubrey said, around a third of patients who go through the entire qualifying process never actually use the medication, but they have a huge sense of relief just knowing that they have it. We've even heard about patients who have had their symptoms improve when they get their medication. They can sleep at night because they know that they have this option if they need it.
Yeah. Well, I've seen clients that have gone into hospice, and they moved back home from the facility they were living at, and they got better. I didn't want to live another year and a half because she didn't like the food at the place she was at.
Quality of life.
She didn't like the caregiver that was over there, and then she got to see her daughter just about every day. Yeah, it was actually a client of mine, and it was just great to see. And she got to spend time with her mom and vice versa. So let me ask you this. How does statistics in like Oregon and some of the other states have had this law around longer. Mm-hmm. What do those kind of statistics look like?
So they're, it's very similar to here. What we see, what we actually kind of strive for is to have the number of prescribing physicians be, you know, at least maybe half of the number of prescriptions written, meaning that, you know, ideally a physician wouldn't write more than one, maybe two prescriptions a year. Because that's a sign of normalization. You know, we don't want patients to have to find a whole new team of doctors in order to have this option. If it's, you know, if it is their own physician who is supporting them in it and writing the prescription, then again, it should be one or two prescriptions a year. So that's what we're seeing in Oregon and California and some of the other states, that most physicians write about one to two prescriptions a year.
That's it?
Well, statistics, yeah, that's it. But right now, you know, in the early implementation process, it's going to be a little bit different. I know, you know, Dr. Miller has been very public about the fact that he's been writing prescriptions and supporting qualified patients in this option. But that's why, you know, we're really working hard to educate physicians. We have some opportunities coming up. Dr. Grube, who is our medical director, he is a country doctor who has a lot of experience with medical aid and dying. He's a wonderful guy and has had great respect from the people here in Hawaii and the medical providers here. He's done a lot of work here meeting with physicians and medical providers and talking about his experience and training them on how to practice medical aid in dying for their patients. He is going to be giving a presentation in Maui at Maui Medical on August 28th for continuing education credit. And then on August 29th, he'll be in Kona doing a presentation there for continuing education. And on October 30th, he's going to be doing a one-hour webinar for continuing education credits. It's accredited through the American Academy of Family Physicians, a great organization that, by the way, has come out with an engage-neutral stance on medical aid in dying. They really encourage physicians who feel comfortable practicing to practice medical aid in dying with their patients who are qualified. So if people are interested in that, we can... they can go to our website, compassionandchoices.org/Hawaii, and medical providers can get up to one continuing education credit for that. Another great tool we have a doc-to-doc consultation program where a physician can call or email our doc-to-doc program and talk to an experienced physician. It's often Dr. Grube, but sometimes it's another physician who has supported their patients in medical aid in dying and can walk them through the process and answer any questions. It's totally confidential. And right now we're actually in the process of, now that there's some Hawaii physicians who have practice, to have them be mentors for other physicians here and just, you know, spread the love, spread the mentorship the old-fashioned way and have it be very community-oriented.
So those webinars you mentioned and those meetings are not open to the public, though.
The webinar is. I think that I believe that anyone can take part in the webinar. But we also, you know, we do presentations all the time. And if anyone is interested in having someone come and hear a presentation or, you know, do a workshop on medical aid and dying, we're happy to do that. We have speakers who can come and talk to different groups. I spoke to the Lahaina Rotary Sunrise Club on Tuesday. It was great. I love talking to Rotary clubs and different groups because I think people are really curious about what this is, what it really means. There is a lot of misinformation out there, and so, you know, we're happy to go in and clear up and let people know what it is.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So Dr. Miller last week was talking about Kaiser's process and. Mm-hmm. He's their physician that will do the letters and certification. Where are we at right now? Because I know he did a class for oncologists and for the medical people. Mm-hmm. So what about Queens and HPH? I believe mm-hmm. Where are they at right now? Do you have an idea?
So HPH has told us that they do allow their physicians to practice. It is important to note that, you know, a healthcare or hospice can prevent their physicians from practicing, and so we try to ask.
Back up. What did you say? You said hospice can prevent doctors? Doctors
Samantha
and. Is that your boyfriend calling? Come on, Samantha.
My phone's not That's working. Okay. I don't know. It's That's my parents. Okay. I don't know what's happening. Sorry.
So you said hospice agency can prevent the doctor or pharmacy?
Yeah. So what we do, and it's really normal when a law first passes, because they're, you know, hospices, healthcare systems are trying to figure out what it is, who's going to practice. So what we do, because we offer technical assistance, mm-hmm. and we found, in order to help patients access the law, there's three really main ingredients that need to come into place. So one is, a healthcare system needs to have a clear policy that says their physicians are allowed to write the prescriptions. So that means, you know, according to the law, that's called the attending physician. That doesn't mean primary care physician. It just means, you know, they're a licensed Hawaii physician who has the capability of making the diagnosis and prognosis.
Okay.
So to have a really clear policy and make sure their medical provider knows that, to have an internal referral policy is so important, because if a physician chooses not to support their patient, they can refer their patient to someone else who will. So the patient isn't left high and dry. Ideally within the system. And then finally, a patient navigator. Patient navigators are usually nurses or social workers, and they help both the physician and the patient get through the process, because there's a lot. There's a lot involved. There's a lot of paperwork. And so patient navigators are just so crucial, I think, in helping both physicians and patients.
So back to the question. So how does hospice, you said, does it not allow a doctor or a pharmacy to go through with this process and law?
Well, I don't think hospice has anything to do with pharmacies. Okay. But, you know, for hospice, it's a little different situation, because there usually aren't a lot of physicians who are part of hospice. But hospices, they sometimes decide whether or not their staff is allowed to be present when the person takes the medication. And I think part of it is, you know, there's still really unfounded fear, but it happens when these laws pass that,
sure.
you know, they're afraid to have their staff present. But already, you know, I heard a story about a hospice this week, and I'm not going to name any names because I don't know if they want to be public or not, but there was a hospice that said their physicians can't practice, their staff can't be present, and they had a personal experience. They had a patient that really changed their minds. And so now not only will they let their physicians practice, but they actually had a pharmacist come in and train their nurses and social workers on what to do so that they can fully support their patients. And staff is now allowed to be present and can support patients in that option.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I mean, especially if you have no experience with this, all you've heard is stories or read articles or been on the internet. But when it comes to people's lives,
mm-hmm.
I've been called to people's bedside, and clients of mine, you know, and it's a very difficult situation. So I'm glad it happened, because there's only, four hospice agencies in Hawaii? I believe there's only four. Yeah. And so I know of only one that I've experienced that has gone to it and allows their doctors. So I just think it's something that's really important to find out who supports them, who doesn't. I'll talk to Kukua Mau and see where they're at, because they're supposed to be non-committal, right?
Well, and I would encourage patients to ask this very specific questions, because, you know, hospice is wonderful and they want to support their patients, but I would encourage people to ask, can the physician prescribe the medication? Can staff be present? You know, can staff be there if I decide to take this medication, if they're a qualified patient?
Yeah. So I know Dr. Miller was talking about their process. They, you know, so they kind of did a little more proactive approach
mm-hmm.
when they called them in. So I know you said Queens is and HPH, or Queens is starting giving some movement or starting to learn more about this.
I've heard of two different physicians at Queens. I've heard actually that there's a lot of internal pressure, I guess is the best word to say. It's really normal when medical aid and dying laws pass for healthcare systems to be a little bit skittish, and there's no need for it, but
it's
internally. So when patients, nurses, social workers, physicians start saying, you know what, I really want to be able to support my patient, I think we need to change our policy. You know, that's when we start to see, I would say secular healthcare systems tend to change their policies. Catholic healthcare systems, I don't think would ever allow a physician to practice. I can't imagine.
That's a hard one.
It's a hard one. But secular ones like Queens, like HPH, I've heard Hawaii Pacific Health allows their physicians to practice. I've heard they've been training their social workers, nurses, and physicians. They're doing everything they can to really support their patients in all end of life options.
Now, is that Michelle Cantillo over there, over at HPH?
Uh-huh.
I believe that's the person. I've known her for years. I was talking in early discussion years on that. She's great.
Yeah, I've met with Michelle and she's wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to see her after this, actually.
Oh, yeah, we'll tell her I said hello.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about, there were some other end of life option things we were talking about. And there's a couple of attorneys that I know that did their own research. And I know Stephen Yim, actually, in our magazine, an attorney in our magazine, was talking about, he's getting his degree in thanology. You know what that is? The study in dying. He's getting a degree. He's an attorney. Because he sees his clients eventually pass away. Mm-hmm. So it's just a process, learning more about it. And I know he talked to Michelle about that because he actually started a nonprofit where he gives them a pamphlet on different things on this process and aging. And I got to ask him. I'll see him tomorrow. He'll be at the Aging in Place event. But so what are the stories, Aubrey, or things that you see going on locally that we can talk about? What about regarding to Dr. Miller and any other patients?
And before I forget, I just want to say we're going to be at the Senior Fair. So look for our booth at the Senior Fair.
September 2021-22.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yeah.
Okay.
We've been at the Senior Fair the last couple years, and there's a lot of interest. And we've obviously seen it increase as the law became, you know, getting ready to pass and then did pass. So many questions, so much interest. You know, I'd love to give just an anecdotal. I did a presentation to the Hilo Hongwanji. Oh. And so these were all...
The right one right on Kilauea Avenue?
Yep.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, back in the day when he was living there in the 40s, he lived right across the street from that Hongwanji there.
No kidding.
His father, my grandfather, had an Ihara General Store.
Oh, my goodness.
And he actually went there.
Oh, wow.
The only downside to that, he says, that when he was late for school or Japanese class, they would call over to the store. Hey, where's your son?
Oh, no. You
right
know what?
Street.
It's still kind of like that in Hilo.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. Hilo's great.
We love it quite a bit.
My dad's family's from Hilo.
But so anyway, we had a full house. Wow. These were, you know, Hilo has just an incredible Japanese culture and history,
yes.
Obviously. Yeah. So these were 70-something, just the pillars of community over there. And they were so interested and so engaged and just so thankful to be talking about it. And, you know, here in Hawaii, you guys think, oh, Japanese style, we don't discuss, we stoic. Not true. I mean, once people are given, you know, the permission, I guess, or just the forum to start talking about it, and that's what really excites me, because once people talk about it, you know, it becomes less taboo, it becomes less scary. And we had the most incredible discussions with these kupuna, and it led to more presentations elsewhere. I was very impressed with the level of engagement. I thought that this was something you just don't talk about for so long. And I'm really pleased to see that seems to be changing.
Yeah,
and people are happier for it.
Yeah, Kimo Alameda over there does a great job. He's the director on aging over there. He was actually on one of my covers with the four directors on the islands.
Sam, we worked with him, didn't we?
Yeah. He's really good. And, you know, Hilo is such a small community. You and the lava flow started coming down there about 4 years ago. We actually did a cover story on the former director on aging over there. And they have a list of all the seniors that live by themselves up in the Puna district.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
And they visited every single one of them.
Oh, my gosh, that's great.
To make sure, hey, are you okay? How are you doing? Is there anything we need? You know, you have to be careful. We'll let you know if you need to move out of your house. But they went in a van. And actually, our writer at the time, Catherine Smith, went in that van and spent all day. And it's amazing. They have a whole list. So they're very organized. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to take that to Maui and you got to take it to Kona.
Mm-hmm.
Kona, there are a lot of younger active seniors over there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little hotter though, but they have a great community down there. And then of course, Maui and Kauai. That's something, if you can do that, I mean, mm-hmm. if you can get in front of 100, 200 local Japanese ladies, that's pretty good.
Exactly. And you know, this generation, baby boomers, maybe a little bit older, this is a generation that's used to being in charge of every aspect of their lives. And those are the people now thinking about the end chapters of their life. And they're talking about it. So, you know, I have to just, Sam had mentioned earlier, you know, the conversations that are being had. Medical aid in dying is not for everyone. It's only for a tiny, tiny percentage, but it is leading us to talk about the whole greater picture. Mm. So I have to make a plug for Barbara Coombs Lee's book, which is called Finish Strong. Barbara Coomsley is the former CEO and president, now just president, I believe, of Compassion and Choices. And this book is amazing. It talks about everything. I highly recommend it.
Great. So go to CompassionandChoices.org or to kukuamau.org here in Hawaii. Thanks, ladies. Samantha Treff from Compassion and Choices. Aubrey Hawk, our PR expert here. Thanks so much, everybody. And don't forget, go to generations808.com for this show back on our website in a couple weeks. Alrighty, as always, aloha and live well.
The preceding program was sponsored by Generations Magazine.